Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is a podcast from BBC Studios, the commercial subsidiary of the BBC. You're listening to Season 3 of the Talentworks podcast, an interview series with digital talent brought to you by Helen O'Donnell and me, Brona Monaghan. Each week, Helen and I speak to the best in the business when it comes to digital talent. Here at BBC Studios, it's our job to discover and nurture the next generation of talent who've built their audiences online and are evolving and innovating the media landscape as we know it. Lottie Jeffs is a journalist, creative director, and author. Her illustrious career includes being published in The Independent, The Guardian, The Sunday Times, and The Evening Standard, and of course many more. She won Writer of the Year at the Press and Publishing Association Awards in 2016 and was shortlisted for Columnist of the Year in 2017 for her eponymous column Lottie's Lexicon in Elle magazine. Lottie has always been on the pulse when it comes to seeking out the most creative talents of our generation, and her eye for a story is second to none. So it's no wonder that after 15 years as a deputy editor and then finally acting editor-in-chief of Elle magazine, that she was appointed creative director at global advertising agency Ogilvy to bring her storytelling expertise to the ad agency world. She has since published her first book, How to Be a Gentlewoman, and continues to contribute to various publications. Here's our interview with Lott. This recording contains some strong language. Hi Lottie, welcome to the Talentworks podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We just want to touch a little bit more on your career, and then we're also going to cover the retreat that we're currently on with the BBC Writers
Room. The retreat,
it's survival. No, it's not. We've taken away a group of 8 really brilliant talent who are digitally minded and forward thinking. And with that in mind, I would love to sort of start on, because you're a journalist by trade.
Yes.
Tell us how you first got into writing.
So it's interesting that you refer to me as digital talent, because I feel like I got into writing very much at the vanguard of print becoming something bigger and different and digital. So I was probably the last generation of journalists that didn't get taught about online journalism at university. And as I was graduating, really, online journalism was nascent. Like, it was the beginnings of social media. I think Facebook didn't exist when I was at university. So I got into journalism, I guess, in a quite an old school way, which was studying English literature, writing for the student paper. I was quite entrepreneurial while I was at university. I was always about trying to make money, and I was pitching ideas to places like The Independent from a really young age, and wrote a few articles for The Independent, and it was an amazing feeling seeing my name in print then in the actual newspaper, and just loved it, and found a few work experience places, went into the Sunday Times. And then when I graduated, I got a job on probably the most unglamorous, unrelevant to my personal interests magazine that I could possibly have worked on. It was for the Institute of Quality Assurance, and I was, I think, the editorial assistant. And it was absolutely brilliant. And even though I couldn't at the beginning have cared less about international standardisation, I don't think I cared any more about it by the end. But what was brilliant about it was I learned how a magazine's made, because it was such a small team. I was such a pivotal part of it. I was doing everything from ordering the paper to flat planning the issue, which is where you kind of plot out what's going to be on what page, to commissioning photographers, commissioning articles, you know, stuff that I would never have had a chance to do if I'd gone in at a bigger title. So a piece of advice that I often give young people getting into this industry is to sort of try and leave ego behind at that really early stage. Like, if I was being driven by ego then, I would have been like, oh, I don't want to be associated with the Institute of Quality Assurance. I'm a cool young person that's into like art and music and culture. But actually doing that, meeting the people I worked with there, learning, being open, was such a great grounding for me in the industry. So that was my first job. And then I moved into contract publishing and worked for a magazine for British Airways. And then it was from there that I really got my big break into the job that could finally satiate my ego, which was for the Evening Standard magazine. And I started as a features editor. And I think I got that job by just having good ideas. When I went for the interview, I pitched ideas that I thought could be in that magazine, and I think they were different and people liked them. So got a job as features editor and then worked my way up in that magazine. And I was actually offered the job of editor of that magazine on the day I got a phone call offering me a job as the deputy editor for Elle. And it was a real dilemma. Did I want to be an editor of this magazine or did I want to be the deputy editor of another magazine? And in the end, I decided to be a deputy at Elle because Elle was like a dream place for me to work. You know, I'd worked my way up from the Institute of Quality Assurance to Elle. Brilliant. And I really liked the editor-in-chief there, a woman called Lorraine Candy. I thought she was a brilliant, formidable leader. And I really liked what she'd done with the magazine, which was to make it a bit more digital. So finally, I was going to get my opportunity to work in a digital space, because up until that point, even then, the Evening Standard magazine had been quite backwards, I guess, in what it was doing for the magazine. It was basically just like putting all of the content that was in the magazine on the internet, and it was like a laborious content management job that I thankfully didn't have to do. So finally I was going into this dynamic print digital hybrid agency style magazine. Worked there for 3 years, absolutely loved it, loved working for Lorraine, loved the team, brilliant. Then Lorraine left and I was the acting editor-in-chief, which was a real shock. I didn't expect her to leave. So I then was in charge and I was the boss, and I had to keep the magazine going while also applying for the job, because obviously that's a hot ticket job. If we've all read Devil Wears Prada, like, we know what that industry's like. So other people were applying for that job. I was applying for the job. In the end, I didn't get the job. And long story short, I then left. I then decided to use the skills that I developed as a magazine editor and journalist in a different place. So I went and started meeting with people who worked as headhunters for advertising agencies. And I got a job as a creative director at Ogilvy, which was a real risk. They took a risk on me. It wasn't something I had any experience of. It was a brave new sort of, well, let's see what happens if we bring a magazine editor into the advertising industry. And it was really fun, and I learnt loads, and I made some adverts, I made content. You know, that's, we're all here as content creators, and actually that was one thing I learned, that telling stories and narrative and ideas are things that transcend the medium, really. So I had been in a position of telling a story as a journalist, and now I was in an ad agency where it was about telling a brand story. So that was a really interesting connection. But at the end of the day, I didn't actually enjoy it all that much there. It was very male dominated, and it just, I didn't feel like I could really make my mark in the way I wanted to make there. So then I went freelance, and then I wrote a book called How to Be a Gentlewoman, The Art of Soft Power in Hard Times, which you can buy on Amazon. And I wrote that book, and now I'm writing freelance for all the nationals magazines. I'm working from this retreat on some TV ideas. I'm working with some digital content ideas for advertising and commercial things. I'm still writing journalism. I'm working on a book, and that's what I'm doing.
Lottie, what drives your creativity? Yeah.
Ooh, honestly, a desire to, I guess my instinct is to say, make money and be happy and look after my family. Like, honestly, I think that I've always felt like it's really important to have some financial security, and that has been driving me. But I guess it can't just be that, because if it was just that, I would have just got a really boring job in a bank or something. Not that I could ever have done that job, but, you know, something well-paying that makes money. So maybe it's a mix of feeling like I have a real urgent story to tell, or a real urgency in, like, getting my voice heard. And that, once you start having a platform to tell your story, it's actually quite addictive. And that feeling of writing something and seeing it in the world and seeing the impact that it makes on culture is a really compelling thing. So I think it's a mix of wanting to just quite basically make some cash, and also to feel like I'm fulfilled creatively and I'm having, I'm leaving a legacy, I'm telling a story.
Well, that's where I think there's the parallels, you know, traditional storytellers and digital storytellers, but also where there's the tension, because I think, you know, the publishing world, particularly in fashion magazines, there has been a lot of press about the sort of tension between so fashion blogs versus editorial. And I think we are now getting to a point where the two kind of are collaborating a lot more, and we see the value of traditional and digital. And I guess that's back to the, whenever I we kind of talked originally, you'd said, I think it's interesting, you think I'm digital talent. I mean, we kind of call people digital talent as a way to sort of stand out in the industry, but really it's forward thinking talent. And your career path has been so, you're clearly very entrepreneurial, multifaceted, multi-talented. And I think that's sort of how digital talent have risen, because they take online platforms and they have autonomy and they have to be sort of all parts of a business. Did you feel that tension when you were at Elle?
So something I've really got out of being here at this retreat is really getting to know influencers and online storytellers and really understand what they do and what their day-to-day job is like, and how incredibly driven and ambitious and talented they all are. I think I came from a school of journalism and editing which really equated experience with quality. Like, we had all worked so hard to get to where we were, and then we'd see these young pretenders coming in and sitting on the front row, or having articles published online, and it's threatening in a sense, because one, you don't really understand it, and two, you feel like, how dare they? They've been doing, they're like 21, I'm 37. Like, it's not fair that they get the platform to tell their story and I've been working my way up all of these years to tell my story. And I do think, so I think that that was wrong for me to have thought that, and being here has really helped me realise that I can get so much more from being open and collaborative with people who do come from this different world, rather than feeling like they're a threat to me, or it's me or them. But one thing I do still believe is that the training that I received as a journalist, and just the very act of being a print journalist and having your work edited by someone else and really having to work on it, I do believe that the actual quality of the writing, you're going to get better quality of writing in the New York Times or the Guardian than you are by someone who is a really ambitious and aspirational blogger. I just do think that that it's better. It's more authoritative. It's different. Like, and I think what the other online creators here are doing is they're not trying to be amazing print journalists. They're creating content in such a different way. So I think for me to understand that they're not coming after my job, they're doing something brilliant that I really actually want to learn from, has been very eye-opening. So thank you for inviting me.
No problem at all.
I think that's really interesting. And I think your point on editing, having an editor, mm-hmm. is interesting and getting feedback on your work.
Right, because a lot of these people actually don't have Absolutely. That. They're just, it's all going out there, yeah. you know.
And I think there's something to be said by, if you carry on doing something and keep going, you do get better. You can't, there is a gradient on, if you keep creating your work, then you're going to get better. But to have a steep growth or to really make a fundamental change in your work, you do need to get feedback and collaborate with people. And whether that is at an early stage, another person creating content on Instagram or another person creating content on YouTube, it's sort of that, it does bunny hop you a level in the same way that, you know, when you were with your early writing, yes, it is better to get other people's voices to look at your work.
Mm, it does just make it better. And having been an editor as well as a journalist who is edited, I really believe that every piece of work benefits from the process of editing. I don't think it ever makes it worse.
So how do you, a consideration might be saying, oh, well, if I'm getting someone to edit my work, are they diluting my message?
Mm. I think you have to trust that the person editing your work understands the audience and the, in my case, publication, in a way that perhaps you as a contributor don't. And that can be hard to reconcile sometimes, particularly when you're close to the work. At the moment, after this podcast recording, I'm going to have to go back to my room and work on an article that I'm writing for a big magazine. I've written it and I think it's great, and it's 3,000 words. It needs to be 1,500 words. The process for me of cutting those words is really, really hard. And I almost feel like I'm too close to it and I can't do it. But I know I have to do it, because to get paid for the article, I need it to fit the word count. And I used to get really annoyed when I was a journalist and someone would file copy to me and be like, so sorry, it's 3,000 words longer, but it's really good. It used to piss me off so much, but now I am that person. So I think I do worry that the younger people who are YouTube creators that I've met on this weekend, they don't have the sort of more experienced role models necessarily advising them on their work in the way that I do. And I so value like the older, more experienced editors who have helped me craft my writing and have helped me be a better writer. I'm sure they probably do have people, but there's just not quite the same like grand dames of YouTube as there are of editorial magazines. And I love the, you know, like Tina Brown, Hanya Yanghara, like there's so many amazing older women editors that I've really looked up to. And I wonder what some of these other people that are on the retreat would have as an equivalent.
Well, that's it. There's an element of longevity as well, I think, for a lot of big online creators. They can have big moments. I mean, one of our talent here, Becky, she's talked a lot about how she grew very, very quickly on YouTube. And then there's that instant pressure. Okay, I've now got 100,000 more people watching me. What's the next step? And so you're always thinking of, okay, the next video or the next post. You're not really thinking, where do I want to be in 5 years?
Yes.
Because you're almost a slave to your platform in a way.
And I think that's why things like this are important.
Yeah.
Because it does build a bridge with other people. Other people, whether that's other creators mm-hmm. or traditional media. And it's good to hear both sides, isn't it? Because there is a tension sometimes, but it's good to share learnings, because mm-hmm. that is ultimately how both sides are going to get better.
Absolutely.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
absolutely.
Well, that's it, because we think that you bring an amazing perspective to everything, because, I mean, ultimately your career has moved forward in a more digital way. Your literary agent works for a digital first management company.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. So your first book was with Gleam Titles. Tell us a little bit about it.
I met Abigail Bergstrom, who's my literary agent, through Elle. She had actually written a really brilliant piece for us, and she was somebody who kind of introduced us to new literary talent. And when I left Elle, I had a meeting with her and spoke about ideas, and she really kind of clung on to this one idea that I had around the idea of being a gentlewoman. It was a piece that I'd written for Elle originally that had kind of gone viral online and was shared a lot, and people were really feeling a connection to it, which was the 39 things that make you a gentlewoman. And it was literally like riffing from the top of my head of things that I really respected and liked about other women, like has a pack of cards in the house, drinks whiskey, dances at weddings, reads books to children and does funny voices. Like, it was literally like just things off the top of my head that I thought made cool women. And yeah, it was shared a lot. People were like, oh, you're so number 12, or I wish I was more number 14, whatever. So that was kind of the original kernel of the idea for this book, but then it turned into something a lot deeper. I realized that what I was getting at with this list was a way of being, and then I explored the way of being more than the kind of pithy etiquette guidey listicle format. So it went from something digital to something quite the fact that it's print and that it's a book is integral to its message.
And how did you find going from being a magazine journalist to writing a book?
It was really hard to allow myself the space to write something longer. The way I write now, and I think I've had that like Malcolm Gladwell thing of however many hours it is that he says you need to put into
10,000
hours. I have done that with magazine writing now. So when I sit down to write an article, I have it in my head. I can write it beginning, middle and end, quotes, points, done. I'm like editing, self-editing as I'm writing it. And with writing a book, I couldn't do that because I had to physically write 90,000 words. So if I kept self-editing, I would like not have produced the amount of words that I needed for a book by any means. So I was writing and then I was kind of going off on a tangent. And if I was writing a piece of journalism, I would have been like, no, delete, superfluous, not necessary to the story, tangent, gone. But with this, I was like, okay, I'm actually just going to go with this tangent now, and I'm going to see where it takes me, and I'm going to just relive that moment, and I'm going to describe it, and I'm going to actually, I ended up using a lot of other like literary references in my books. So I'd reference a Philip Larkin poem or a piece of Shakespeare or a piece of philosophy or psychology or other things that I was interested in, and I sort of just allowed myself to go there in a way that I don't when I write journalism. So actually, in the end, once I gave myself that space and that time to just write, I really, really enjoyed it. And actually writing a book felt like an amazing privilege.
I know, I always think, why can't I write a book?
You can. Anyone can write a book. You just need to do it.
Well, that's it. I suppose it's just putting those, I mean, it's time. It's that dedication of time.
Yeah, that's hard.
Then also, how have you found now on this retreat? Obviously, we're working up TV ideas. Do you find the process similar in coming up with?
Really similar. And I think a great testament to the fact that I left journalism to move into advertising, because in that world, I really learned how to create a deck, how to sell an idea, what a strategy of an idea was, how to package it up, how to present. You know, all of those things are not really things you get taught as a magazine editor. You kind of have to do presentations, but like no one really tells you how. I had no idea how to even use Keynote before I worked in advertising. So it's been really interesting to see the similarities. But actually what's been the main similarity is the idea of pitching an idea. So I've worked on a daily newspaper, a weekly magazine, a monthly magazine, and advertising, which is like really long. And now I know about pitching ideas in TV as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny, like the way it's different, you know, in a daily magazine, it's literally like, what happened overnight? What's the idea? Do you want it? Yes, no, bam, next idea. Mm-hmm. In when I used to run editorial meetings at Elle, people would pitch ideas to me. And the way they'd pitch would be very much like, so I've read this thing in the New York Times and I've read this thing in the Guardian and I saw this thing on Twitter. And so I think that this is a trend. It's about this. We could speak to this person. What do you think? So it's like a verbal thing, no PowerPoint, no keynote presentation, just very much conversation, yes or no then in the room. Whereas then in advertising, it was like you couldn't breathe without making a PowerPoint presentation. Everything had to be really thought out and like decks and images and strategy and everything. And then with TV, it feels like a mix of both of those things. Like you're open to the kind of quick, responsive ideas. You're open to treatments being just written out. You seem to be open to like ideas being pitched just in meetings. It's like quite top line thoughts. But then also I've witnessed today what a kind of really thought through deck for a pitch for a TV show would look like.
Yeah, so today we were looking at Factent treatments and we saw five or six different Factent shows and yeah, just sort of demystified them, went through them and said what's in them, what's not in them, at what point would you show this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fascinating for me.
And yesterday we did a session on what is your personal brand and how do you realise an idea that your personal brand is integral to. I just wondered, how did you find that? Because you're so often writing other people's stories.
Yes, that's really interesting. I don't think I have a personal brand necessarily in the way that some of the other people here on the retreat do, because part of your job as a journalist is to kind of lean out and let other people's personal brand shine through. You know, I've done a lot of celebrity interviews and good celebrity interviews, you know, you don't write yourself into the interview. You let the other person shine. It's interesting to have a point of view on in a celebrity interview. And I think the best ones, you do get a sense of the writer and what they think of the person they're interviewing. But it really annoys me when I read celebrity interviews by kind of personality journalists who like the whole first page is like them banging on about themselves and what they had for breakfast the morning they went to do the interview. Like, I'm not there for that. I'm there for the voice of the other person. So part of my career has been putting aside my ego and my personal brand in order to connect with other people's stories. However, now I've written a book, which is very much a kind of strong idea and way of being, which is being a gentlewoman. I think I need to learn how to better package that up as a brand and as a brand that I believe in, that is integral to me. Like, I do see myself as that person. I want to be that person. It's something that I feel like more people should aspire to be. And I think seeing that as a brand and thinking of ideas for how that brand could be extended digitally into TV, into other kind of content avenues, is something that I need to put some more thought into, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think there's a sort of shared, well, it feels like there's a shared sort of opinion that a few people in the group don't feel represented in mainstream media, and that's kind of where their frustration comes from. Is that something that you agree
with? Yeah, I think so. Certainly as a gay woman, you don't see many representations of gay women on TV. I'm excited about the return of the L word, which lesbians or non-lesbians listening will just be excited about as well, because it was the first time we saw gay women who weren't like having an awful time. They lived in LA, they were glamorous, they were sexy, they were cool, they were having fun. You know, it was an aspirational lifestyle. And I feel like until that point, being a lesbian on telly had been like pretty Brookside-y and like grim. So I am really keen to see more positive representations of gay people generally, but particularly gay women on TV. I think we're slightly getting there with men. I think we're seeing much more examples of very happy, realised, different kinds of gay men on TV, like Queer Eye. We're seeing Jonathan, he's incredibly sort of in touch with his feminine side and flamboyant. And then we're seeing, you know, more sort of old school Graham Norton types. And then we're hearing stories of like the rugby player who has come out, can't remember his name. You know, we see many more examples of the plethora of identities within the gay community, but I do still feel like they're more often men than they are women.
Absolutely. And I'd love to just sort of wrap up with what's been your highlights so far from the retreat? What do you think you'll take away?
I have really enjoyed having my mind changed about what social media influencers are all about. I think I came here feeling like I'd probably find everyone really annoying because I'm a decade older than them. I've got a kid. They're all like really performative and young. I'm sounding like really bitter now. But the end of this sentence is I've really enjoyed not feeling that and actually finding the similarities in our experiences and learning from each other and feeling kind of welcomed in by them as well. Like, I don't feel like they're sort of threatened by my presence here or vice versa. So that has been, just being around those people that I'm never normally around has been really fascinating, and learning about like the pressures of their life and career. Like, it's mental to me, like having to manage that audience at all times, like on your phone, having hundreds of thousands, in some cases millions of people literally there on your phone that you could just be like, hey guys, and you'd have like a million people respond to you. Like, the power and the responsibility and the pressure of that is something that it's really, really hard for me to understand. But through talking to some of them on this retreat, I've begun to appreciate what that means and what level of kind of self-control and ambition that they all have. And that's been really eye-opening.
Brilliant. We ask all guests, is there a piece of work or a talent that you're particularly inspired by at the moment?
Well, I think for any aspiring magazine journalists, I would say read New York Magazine, because New York Magazine is consistently brilliant. The articles, the ideas, the way they present their ideas visually, the tone of voice and the quality of the writing is great. TV-wise, Succession has been my passion for the past few months that it's been on, the new series. I just think the writing is absolutely incredible and funny and dark and nuanced and just absolutely brilliant.
Everything I've done in my life, I've done for my children. I know I've made mistakes, but I've always tried to do the best by them because I love them.
Have you thought about the possibility that your children are actually scared of you?
Oh, fuck off.
Honestly, some of the influencers I've met here, I would be like, seriously, you guys need to check out Becky Bambino. She's like so funny. And I feel like her career is going to go stratospheric. And I'm happy to have met her and had a stomp around a farm and met some cows with her today before she, you know, forgets me on her dizzying trajectory to fame and fortune. So I think, like, definitely some of the other influences here as well, like Gina is incredibly inspiring, Gina Martin, and Riyad, you know, is doing some great work for the gay community. So in terms of influences, I'd say it's really like the people I've met on this
brilliant
thing, because I don't really engage in that world up until this point.
Great. And if somebody wanted to find more about you and your work, where would they go?
So you can visit my website, LardyJeffs.com, or you could just buy my book, which you could buy by going into a bookshop and paying for it at the counter, or you could buy it on Amazon. Just Google my name or the title of the book, which is How to Be a Gentlewoman, The Art of Soft Power in Hard Times.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to
us. Thank you for inviting me. It's been brilliant.
Of course. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the TalentWorks podcast. For more interviews like these, click the subscribe button and you'll be notified when our next conversation goes live. Or you can follow us on Instagram at BBC Studios TalentWorks. See you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.